My guest today is Ely Danto, is an award-winning playwright, performance poet, political and social commentator, author and human rights attorney. She was born in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and raised in Stamford, Connecticut. She holds a BA from Boston College, a JD from the University of Connecticut School of Law, and attended the Hartford Conservatory for Ballet, Jazz, and Modern while studying Haitian dancing at home with countless Haitian dance experts in the field. I had the pleasure of hearing and seeing her speak a number of years back at a conference at UC Berkeley and having her as a guest on Takes on the World shortly after that. Reading what she has posted on the internet, and as you will hear this morning, her passion for justice for the people of her native Haiti is stronger than ever. Welcome, Ely Danto, to Takes on the World.
Thank you very much for having me.
There was an article in the front page of the New York Times on July 6th and continued over two pages inside that revealed, or seemed to reveal, in all its ugly detail, how the Clintons, Bill and Hillary, representing President Obama, have been instrumental in a process that led to the eviction of 366 Haitian farmers from their fertile agricultural land to make way for a textile plant run by SEA, a South Korean company known for its brutal and inhumane treatment of its workers. Moreover, the plant had been financed with $224 million in subsidies taken from funds that were intended to rebuild what had been destroyed in the earthquake 2.5 years ago. But as you explained in an email to me and on the phone, that article, as important as it was, doesn't begin to tell the whole story.
Precisely. It doesn't begin to tell the whole story. You know, they are using tax dollars to give land to foreigners and to get rid of, as you say, jobs that Haitians already have. And the idea is that they're saying that this is the centerpiece of reconstruction for Haiti. And in this centerpiece of reconstruction, they're going to provide 20,000 jobs to Haitians within a six-year period. What folks must understand is not only is this idea of giving jobs to Haitians, it's about first taking away the livelihoods of 366 and more peasants, but it's also really, truly about Haiti's resources. Nowhere in this article does the New York Times talk about that Haiti has the most gold than any other place, in at least that they have found, in the Americas. And that 9 miles away, Newmont Mining is there starting to mine Haiti's gold and has been doing so for 8 years since they got rid of the democratically elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And so we have $20 billion that they are now admitting to of gold. But when you read the New York Times article, and as objective as that is for the New York Times, in all the 8 years I've been doing the non-colonial narrative and reviewing articles written on behalf of Haiti by the mainstream media, I would say this is probably the second best one that they've done in 8 years. However, and though it talks about that this is a switch and bait, this is about taking earthquake monies and putting it someplace that wasn't broken, taking jobs from Haitians and building a factory for the South Koreans who have a criminal record. Now, this is, I'm quoting the AFL-CIO in terms of their abuse of their own workers in Guatemala, Nicaragua, and other places they've been in the Americas. They have been accused of using death squads to put down unions, even rape of union folks. And these are the folks that the Clintons have worked really hard to get to Haiti because, you know, the idea is that cheap labor is sort of an attraction for these companies. The thing is, cheap labor in the Americas at the moment cannot compete since the Berlin Wall fell, since the Cold War ended, with the opening of the Asian market with 1.3 billion Chinese who can make less than $2 an hour, and Haitian wage is as bad as it is and as low as it is higher than what they can get in China. So what this is, what folks must understand, is that this is truly about putting infrastructure in place for the mining companies, and something else no one is talking about, not yet admitting, the vast oil reserves of Haiti that is up in the north.
Well, and this is something that has basically been kept secret from the American people. And how much has been discussed in Haiti? Obviously, the new president, or relatively the president there, Martelly, is another puppet, the kind of puppet the United States really likes to have in the Americas, in which Aristide was not.
Well, yes. I mean, Michel Martelly was voted in by only 17% of the voters, registered voters, because this is what is called the shock doctrine, where the United States and the Western imperialists and those countries use natural disasters to pass through, the shock of natural disasters, to pass through provisions and policies they would never have been able to do if the people were not traumatized by earthquake, by ravages of cholera, and by ravages of coup d'etat and ravages of storms. So Haitians have gone through all of that in the last 3 years in an intensive level, with the coup d'etat of 2004 starting the occupation of the United States behind the mercenary guns of the UN, because Washington really calls the shot. So you have earthquake happening, and 1.7 million people who were voters losing their voting cards, but still the United States pushed through this election. So it really was a selection. And though he was elected, he was only elected by those who were able to find their cards. And of course, the Lavalas party of President Aristide, who was ousted by the Bush administration twice, was not allowed to vote. So you have this tiny little group of people who actually did vote. Over 80% of the people did not vote. So that's what we have. And the United States finally has its open for business government on top of the heads of all this misery of Haitians. And so this open for business government is signing all sorts of conventions with mining companies and oil companies. And of course, the people have absolutely no idea what's going on. And whenever Hillary Clinton over at the State Department wants something done in Haiti, she'll send Cheryl Mills down recently, you know, at the parliament. And they'll basically say, you know, do you really want to block what we want here? Because if you do, then what they do is, as they did with when 19 of the presidential candidates said at 12 o'clock during the vote that it was all a sham and there was so much irregularities that they stopped. They asked their voters, they asked their folks who were voting for them to stop voting. This was at 12 o'clock, the day of this vote of for the current administration. But what happens is they have. The international community is beholden to the United States. They'll send Cheryl Mills, who, like I said, who is the assistant to Hillary Clinton, and they'll threaten to hold Haitian visas, which a lot of the Haitian parliament have. They have, so they'll do those things to continue to guide and occupy Haiti in the way that it serves the corporatocracy.
My guest is Azealia Danto. We're talking about the situation in Haiti. This seems to be just a continuation of the whole history of the U.S. relationship with Haiti. Haiti has never been forgiven for overthrowing its French colonial masters, and obviously the United States has taken upon itself to make sure that the Haitians learn that lesson, that they do not stage a genuine revolution against their colonial masters. Matter of fact, the income, the economy, the greatness of France was built on the backs of the Haitian sugar industry, the Haitian sugar workers. Most people aren't aware of that, but and of course the United States was threatened early on. Our great founding fathers felt threatened by the Haitian Revolution.
Yes, of course. You know, Haiti was the first to bring liberty into application in this Western Hemisphere, at a time when everywhere there was chattel slavery, and everywhere the powerful countries of Northern Europe were, you know, colonizing the indigenous folks of the Americas and doing the triangular trade. So in the midst of that, you have African warriors who stands up, and after 300 years of free labor to the Europeans to build up, as you say, France. You know, Columbus in 1492 was looking for, you know, gold and spices and so forth, and India ended up in Haiti, Haiti. What he did not find, which was the gold, they have now found with their equipment and into the mountains that they have been digging into for the last eight years behind UN guns. But in order for Haiti to exist within this hostile American Mediterranean that had slavery, you know, Haiti, it wasn't until Abraham Lincoln had the Emancipation Proclamation, and that's 60, you know, it was not 1865. Haiti took its independence in 1804. So in that time, there was a blockade of Haitian trading. There was a, you know, all the European white settlers were deathly afraid of Haiti, not just your, you know. So it wasn't until after the Emancipation Proclamation that Abraham Lincoln recognized, because Jefferson refused, of course, to recognize, you know, the man who wrote the Declaration of Independence, where, you know, all men are created equal. He just meant all white men, and certainly, definitely not blacks and former slaves. So you have this situation where Haiti, in order to gain its independence, had to pay to France for the property that was lost, and that deal was brokered by all the European nations, because, you know, they have a narrative that's critically important to their growth, and so, you know, in Europe they were killing each other, but overseas they became white. In order to keep that tool of empire, they had to somehow make all white people feel that they were superior to black people, and Haiti sort of, you know, put a bad lever in that. So they forced Haiti to pay billions of dollars. As of 2004, it was estimated at $22 billion that Haiti paid for its independence, and that payment made Haiti pretty poor, because by 1823, they had to close all the schools down and have everyone get into, back into the sharecropping, basically, so that a great percentage of what they made was sent down to France. So the independence debt that Haiti had to pay was actually finished paying that last slave trade payment to the most powerful country in the world, the United States of America, in 1947, because the United States, because of the Monroe Doctrine, wanted France out of the Caribbean, and so there was an invasion of Haiti in 1934, where the United States stayed for 19 years, and it's critically important that I make this point. During that invasion, that first invasion, the Haiti had gold. Obviously, we've always known we've had gold. We've kept it away from the Europeans because we knew what that meant. But that gold was the standard for the Haitian dollar. The moneylenders understood that as long as Haiti had its own standard and its own money, it could bypass the global elite's money machine. So that was the first thing. That's one of the reasons for the invasion of 1934. And the Citibank people said that Haitians had defaulted on this loan that they unilaterally, along with France, renegotiated. This is the independence debt. So then we were paying Citibank and in America the loan money for my grand being property lost to France because of the our combat. So basically, what they did, they came in with the Marines and carted out Haiti's gold reserves from our bank. And to this day, we have not seen that money. To this day, no, you know, it's never been returned to Haiti. Today, now, they've come back to take down the mountains and get whatever gold they can. But that's that's really Haiti's history. We have been servicing European wealth and European well-being, and right now our misery does that. There is $6 billion that has been collected by Bill Clinton at the UN as the UN deputy envoy to Haiti. And that donor country money is what they're using for their own corporatocracy, for their own good, while Haitians remain, about 400,000 Haitians remain on the street from the earthquake 2 years ago, homeless, while cholera that the UN troops brought into Haiti, Haiti has never had cholera, has killed over 8,000 Haitians since October 2010, and has infected almost 600,000 Haitians. So that's where we are.
It's an incredible story. My guest is Ely Danto. The idea that Bill Clinton would be appointed by the UN, this cozy relationship, it's extraordinary. Essentially, the United Nations have given Haiti to the United States. Kofi Annan supported keeping Aristide out of Haiti. Of course, the Clinton administration did not want President Aristide to return to Haiti as he did a year ago, March. And now the United States is trying to prosecute, accusing Aristide of receiving millions of dollars from Miami businessmen. It's like there's a constant ongoing war. And Clinton, the New York Times story said, even apologized for crippling Haiti's rice industry by his trade policies during his presidency. This is like America's, when they took America's backyard, literally, they're dumping everything in America's backyard, meaning Haiti. It's an extraordinary tale. This particular company, SEA, was given everything they wanted. They didn't have to pay for anything. And it turns out that the plot of land, says unknown to senior American officials, the site of this Caracol, the SEA plant, was a prison camp, the site of a U.S.-run prison camp in the early part of the century run by the U.S. Marines. It's an astonishing tale, and yet the American people are kept in ignorance of this.
Yes, well, I don't know. This is what I do consistently every day. You know, there's this narrative going, and the narrative is why the American people don't pay attention. The narrative is that Haiti has no resources, and the United Haiti's a failed state, and it's, you know, these black folks don't know how to govern themselves, and the United States has to, you know, micromanage us and give us civilization, basically. And racism plays, of course, an enormous part in that narrative. So we have patients. We're sort of a laboratory because we don't have any great country that's big to like Cuba has, for instance. It had before the Cold War the Russians to sort of keep at bay the Americans in some ways from taking over and doing as they wish with the resources of Cuba and leaving the people with absolutely nothing. Haiti has, you know, no great godfather, no great country that would stand for it. So the United States does what it wants. We fight from one generation to the other to maintain our sovereignty or our dignity. It is the greatest, you know, David and Goliath fight that's unknown to the world. But, you know, as you mentioned, Obama has done worse than Bush did to Haiti. And that's an amazing indictment because I can't begin to tell you how the Bush administration, the second, went through doing the bicentennial with the coup d'etat. But here you have Obama, you have the UN. The UN is nothing, especially in Haiti. but mercenaries for the United States. That's all they are. They give jobs. Haiti gives jobs to 10,000 or more UN troops, and the United States decides which country are going to get those nice, cushy tourist jobs. They've been there for 8 years. They've made over $4 or $5 billion on our misery, on our head, and not one pipe of clean water has been laid down, and yet they have brought us cholera that's killing us. Nowhere in it's inhumane. It's inhumane. In addition, the United States decides, like I said, not only which countries are going to get jobs that don't have them, they just swap our lives for this. But they tell the world that somehow they're providing us with help. There are 42,000 non-for-profits in Haiti making money off of Haitian miseries by going on television and showing pictures of Haitians, and poor Americans are sending them $20 a month that never reaches Haiti. And they keep recycling the same pictures. And no one seems to be paying attention. The Red Cross raised over $800 million after the earthquake. People, you know, Obama went on national television and said, you know, send your money to the Red Cross. So did Bush. And all of, you know, this right now, they're using that money to build for-profit tourist hotels while the people are dying of cholera and have no homes. This is where we are. And then you have, like, for instance, you know, South Korea, which is a clientele state of the United States, you know, because of North Korea, they haven't been able to get a stranglehold there. So they basically had to cuddle the South Korean company to come to Haiti because there's no way they could make a profit. As I said, I gave all those reasons. And so they took the land from the farmers and gave it for free to the South Korean. They gave them the factory for free, and they're going to give South Korean workers, you know, luxurious gated homes in Haiti, keeping the apartheid going because obviously, you know, the Haitian oligarchs, 0.5% of the population, owns 98% of their wealth and act as overseers for the Clintons and folks. The stranglehold of is amazing because Paul Farmer, who is the second behind the UN envoy, Bill Clinton, and his partner now, a South Korean Dr. Jim Young Kim, is head of the World Bank, and for the first time in UN history, the World Bank, and not the UNDP, is the banker for the funds that are being raised for Haiti. And this is sort of like their little cachet. At the UN, the World Bank collects the monies for Haiti, and they've got the South Korean-born guy deciding, you know, what's going to be reconstruction, hand-in-hand with Bill Clinton and Paul Farmer. These strangers are the ones that are deciding what to do with Haiti. So meanwhile, you know, we are pretty much the only voice out here naming names, telling folks what's going on, asking Americans to please pay attention. Your neighbors are getting slaughtered by people you think are humanitarians, but they are collecting money and building hotels and paying for their trust funds while Haitians die.
My guest, Zili Danto, we're talking about the crimes against Haiti. When you read this New York Times article, It should have elicited what was in there, outrage, and the AFL-CIO, of course, is unhappy, but they were not going to go against a Democratic president since they're part of the Democratic Party. Perhaps if the labor unions in this country actually held politicians' feet to the fire, it might be a little different, but they object to it. They have all their objections, but they're not going to do anything. But really, what interesting in the article, it says there's a fellow named Lon Garwood, who's a senior advisor to Sayoth, the South Korean firm. He used to work for Liz Claiborne, which was also known for its exploitation and maltreatment of workers in sweatshops around the world. And they were giving the company so many perks to come into this agricultural zone. He says, well, we thought maybe they really do want us to create a sweatshop, Lon Garwood joked. Also, this area is one of the most pristine areas in terms of the bay there. The water was going to be a natural, beautiful site. They're going to bring in the kind of oil production, or the production to run this factory, which is going to pollute this beautiful, pristine area of Haiti. I mean, the environment, we've seen pictures of what's happened in Ecuador when the oil companies were there. Are we going to see this in Haiti as well, or when?
Well, yes. And the sad part about it is, you know, Haiti already is an ecological disaster, you know, with all sorts of, you know, deforestations that happened during, you know, the various destruction of Haiti by those who colonized it. Of course, they blame it all on the poor Haitians anyway. But this particular area is a pristine, I invite everyone who's interested, really, there's so much to cover, to go to my website at esleydansal.com/Zili. The piece is called Foreign Investment Means Death and Repression. You can Google that also. Haiti, Foreign Investment Means Death and Repression. And in that piece, you know, we do cover the fact that the environmental disaster, this space that they've taken over, has the most extensive mangrove reserve, and it has like a large strip of coral reef. This is a place where Haitians are actually living well. I mean, not, you know, just at least living, you know, not well in terms of the materiality and monetary standards of Americans, but, you know, they have the ocean, they have the fish, they have, the you know, this place, at this coral reef where they can actually live. And this area, the bay, had been picked by international environmental organizations, the UN, and for, you know, I think it was 1,100 miles of coastline, to become like the first marine protected area in Haiti. This whole Caracol sweatshop industrial park is going against that. So the New York Times did do a good job in showing that the environmental devastation that's going to occur once the this bay is going to be used by these people for their sweatshops. Also, the New York Times doesn't mention it, and I list all of the stuff that they don't mention. You know, the fact that they say that the government of Haiti leased to this international conglomerate this land, and leased to them Fort Liberté, which is a deep water port in Haiti, leased to them the bay. It doesn't mention how long they leased it, because if they did, then we would see that this has something to do with giving jobs to Haitians. So they've always wanted Fort Liberté. Those who are interested in why Fort Liberté is so important should actually, you know, just Google U.S. economic reasons for going into Haiti, and you'll see that Fort Liberté, for decades, they've wanted it. So these are their vision for Fort Liberté is an oil transshipment port. It's a deep water port. They can't use a lot of, because of American laws, environmental laws. So they've come to Haiti to use ours because, you know, we, as I say, we have no big gun power to protect us against these great predators for the corporate elite. So we have that. It's just this Caracol is a bait. It's window dressing for infrastructure and housing for Denver-based mining company Newmont that has the subsidiary names of Eurasian or Marion Mining. There's another one, Canadian Majesco, which was working with VCS Mining, and these other foreign companies who are going to be mining Haiti's gold, silver, copper, which is worth $20 billion. If they're saying $20 billion, you might as well just double that, because they're not going to tell us exactly how much. Now, the other thing that's important to understand is that Haitian Americans are playing a very pivotal role as being overseers. And this is not new, because back in the first occupation of Haiti in 1934, when black Americans were barely surviving as sharecroppers and there was a Jim Crow, that was the first time they actually used the word Haitian American. The white folks had a company that they called the Haitian American Sugar Company. They had another company. I'm not, can you, this is 1934, okay? They had another company called the Haitian American Society for Agricultural Development. The reason was because Haiti had laws that said that foreigners could not own property in Haiti. So they used folks of Haitian descent who had connections in America, and that was the first time the hyphenates, you know, everyone thinks, you know, Haitian American is something new, some hyphenate that came out like in the 80s or 90s. But back in the day when, you know, Americans were practically re-enslaved doing for Jim Crow and were sharecroppers, they were using these names. So today they have these high-profile Haitian Americans, just like they have these high-profile blacks over at the UN, Susan Rice, Cheryl Mills over at the State Department. You know, the same thing. The way they use Colin Powell and these folks are overseers for empire who use their race as a tool to deflect the racist attitudes and the blatant racism. And so we have many Haitian Americans right now who are part of these mining companies who are just, you know, lending their face and their color, just like you know, white women in America lend their gender to maintain the old boys network. So we have to become very much more sophisticated as human beings and understand that there is just one human race, and there are people that are being used by the same feudal lords that that made it impossible to live in Europe in the first place back in the day.
My guest is Azile Danto. Now, the treatment we've seen of Haitian Americans by the U.S. government compared to Cubans, I mean, you know, Haitian immigrants who've come here for economic, political reasons because of the horrible economy, compare the treatment that Haitians have received in this country with those coming from Cuba.
Well, yeah, there is a double standard without any doubt. The in the piece, I actually show one of the reasons that for instance, there are 55,000 Haitians right now who have family in the United States and who've gone legally through the process of entering the United States, and the United States has still not issued them visas. You know, they have family members here. So there's always been a double standard where if someone defects from Cuba, because Cuba is not a U.S. client state, the United States used that to show that, you know, there's no democracy in Cuba. Here are these people leaving Cuba because they're being oppressed by a Castro group, Castro folks. But in Haiti, because the United States pretty much, you know, maintains the repression against the will of the Haitian people, when Haitians are taking to the seas, they're not allowed in. They're put in jail, Colm Detention Center, and they said, you know, these are economic refugees, not political refugees, when in essence, they have no political right because they've been disenfranchised by the U.S. In so many ways, as I've explained.
That's a good point, a good point. Actually, we have a couple of callers. Let's go to the first caller. Hello, you're on the air.
I just so appreciate this woman here that's exposing this. It's really refreshing, and God bless her and the rest of us too, and I hope and pray that we can get the same quality of exposing the evil and subtle lies that suck us all into contributing to this at our community level. Thanks.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your call. I agree. Hello. Get another call. Hold, you're on the air.
Yeah. I'd just like to have a guest explain Mickey Martelli. I go to Haiti quite often, and I sense that Mickey Martelli, President Martelli, and especially Prime Minister Lamont, are doing a great job. They've got a vision for Haiti with free education for the children, And I think for the first time ever, Restivics were brought up on International Child's Day by the First Lady. I was just wondering what her vision is for the youth of Haiti.
Okay, thanks for your call. Azili?
Yeah. Well, the vision of for the youth of Haiti is that they will be able to be entitled to their own land without it being given to foreigners, the 42,000 NGOs that are taking over Haiti, that they the riches of Haiti will be used for the future of these young men. He talks about this good job of Matéli, and I have to say, as a member of the of both, you know, having my ancestral home for the last 300 years in one place in Haiti, and also, you know, being raised in America, that I have this Matéli has just for the first time is starting to tax us in the diaspora. So that, you know, President Aristide had created the most schools since the independence of Haiti. Mr. Matéli said that he was going to provide schooling for Haitian youth. And instead of using you know, tax monies by taxing, let's say, the oligarchy that makes, you know, tons of money off of Haitians and doesn't pay any taxes, he decides to tax the poor through the diaspora remittances we send. The Haitian diaspora is almost, you know, 4 million strong all around the world, and we send the most money to Haiti, the most money at all to that any nationality sends back to their country. We send over $2 billion per year. And for the first time, the corporatocracy under Mr. Matéli has figured out a way to actually tax us without our representation. So that every time, for instance, I have to send money, and I run the Haitian Lawyers Leadership Network runs a clean water project in Haiti. Every time we transfer money to help these people, our folks, our family, our with clean water, $1.50 of it goes to some fund that the Western Union is given to Matéli, supposedly for education. And to this day, nobody knows where that money has gone. So they are taxing $2 billion for the first time. And we are the only nationality that is getting taxed by the moneylenders without, you know, more than anybody else. So that if you send money to Jamaica, you're not going to be taxed by Western Union. But if you send money to Haiti, you are being taxed. And this is something that they're doing to us. I mean, that money comes out of... So if I send $100
Azili,
in Haiti...
Azili, yes? Unfortunately, we have come to an end of an hour. We could go on because I would really like to. I really want to express my appreciation for coming on the air and informing our listeners. How can you gave the name of your website? Could you repeat that again, please?
I will. It's Ezili Dantol, EZILIDANTO at com. EZILIDANTOL.com/Zili. We do have a clean water project, and we're about to electrify two villages in Haiti with the Barefoot Movement out of Haiti, so I'm out of India. So those are the projects that we're doing to provide infrastructure for our people, and people's help and support is really appreciated. And if you want to be part of knowing what's going on, hearing the non-colonial narrative, join our mailing list. Go to our website, ezlidantol.com/Zili. You'll see how to do that.
Amen.
Thank you so much.
Great.
For having me.
I'm a subscriber to it, and you want to keep finding what's happening in Haiti, that's what to do. Thanks again so much, Azili, for being our guest today.
You're most welcome. Thank
Bye-bye.
You for all the questions.
Bye-bye.